Welcome to the WVS Podcast, brought to you by WeddingVideographySchool.com, your online resource for building a wedding videography business from start to finish. And now, here's your host, Michael Lee Ring.
Hey everyone, this is Michael with WeddingVideographySchool.com. You're listening to another episode of the WVS Podcast. This is episode 6. Oh man, it's good to be back home. I tell you what, I've been traveling the last couple weeks, and you know how they say it's good to sleep in your own bed? It definitely is good, because I prefer a firm mattress, and not all the hotels and Airbnbs have firm mattresses, so that can be bad on the back. Yeah, went up to St. Paul, Minnesota, which is a really interesting place up here a couple weeks ago for a friend of mine's wedding. He actually interned at the news station that I worked at a few years back when I was really struggling, really trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life and how I was going to make more money and how I was going to, you know, support a family. It was good to see him and his fiance get married. They tied the knot over on the University of St. Thomas campus, which if you haven't been there, which I'd assume most people haven't, really beautiful school, beautiful Catholic university. So anyway, that was a great time, and it got me really thinking. You know, I brought like five or so bags with me, and I was by myself, so I'll have to do a whole episode on traveling, being a traveling videographer, because if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to run into a lot of issues getting through security, getting all your bags from the car into the airport and then to the rental car place, and it can just be a real nightmare. So I'll be working on a travel edition of the podcast pretty soon. And then this last weekend, I was up in Vail, Colorado again. Seems like I'm shooting about half of my weddings this year in Vail. Nice time to be in Vail this time of year, September through October. The leaves are changing. Lots of yellow green leaves on the aspens, and nothing orange yet. Still waiting on some orange and reds to come in, but good to be up there. Did a wedding on top of the mountain. Had some amazing views, and everything really went pretty well overall. You know, I feel like I'm always reaching for the, always striving for the perfect 10 wedding. Rate my weddings on a scale of 1 to 10, and I always think about halfway through the day that I'm going to finally get my 10. But it never seems to happen. Something always seems to go wrong. In my St. Paul wedding, I forgot to turn on the groom's microphone, which is a pretty amateur mistake. And oh man, so I did not get any of the vows, which is obviously pretty upsetting for me. Not as upsetting for my clients, although I'm sure they're not too thrilled about it. But again, they're kind of people that I know, so they're being pretty nice to me about it. But I'm being plenty hard on myself for the both of us. So, yeah, you gotta turn those microphones on, people. You can't just stick the wireless pack on the officiant and the groom and walk away. Gotta turn them on. And then up in Vail, yeah, almost a perfect 10 wedding, except had a couple batteries die on me in the DR60 recorder. The recorder that was recording the officiant. So turns out Duracells in the DR60 recorder will only get you through one wedding, not 2 as I had believed. And for those of you using the Tascam DR60 out there, just be aware that the battery life estimator doesn't really, it seems to be all over the map, because I'll put rechargeable batteries in there that are just fully charged, brand new, fully charged, rechargeable batteries, stick them in there, and yeah, it says they're only halfway full pretty quickly after I turn it on. So, and then I have these Duracells that I put in there, said they were all the way full. A few minutes later, they were halfway full. And then before the ceremony was over, one of the recorders died. So I think I only missed a couple minutes of the officiant talking. So hopefully it's not too bad. And I think if I had to guess, I'd say maybe 2 minutes or so of talking. So hopefully I didn't really miss too much. And I know I didn't miss anything crucial for the highlight video. But yeah, just something to be aware of, guys. Turn those mics on, change those batteries. Even someone who's done a bunch of weddings like me can make those mistakes. So yeah, anyway, it's good to be back. Good to be in my own house. You know, I've gotten a couple emails from people this week, that have been, really cool to hear from people out there. Got a message from Thomas Brown. I'll just sum it up for you. Thomas is from Atlanta, Georgia. Wanted to let me know that he loves the podcast. Installed a podcast app on his phone a few days ago, and bam, he's got the Wedding Videography School podcast in his car while he's driving to weddings. You know, guys, you install a podcast app, and the next thing you know, you got a lot of interesting content right at your fingertips. So that's a good thing. He says, Thomas here says that he does about 60 weddings a year, and he's thankful for the business and that he's able to do this full time, but he says it's way too much work. He's going to be switching some things around with his packages and website. He's told a bunch of his videography friends about the podcast, and he's a YouTuber, Thomas Vision Reef. Vision as in, you know, eye vision, and reef as in coral reef. Thomas Vision Reef is his username on YouTube. Yeah, it sounds like he's having a hard time getting the post-production side of things down in terms of really being efficient and getting things done. Another email from Audrey. Audrey is from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. She says, "Hey, Michael, I'm really enjoying your podcasts. I'm learning a lot. Question for you. As a fellow wedding videographer and new stay-at-home mom, I'm finding that I don't have the time I used to have on post-production. How do you keep your workflow as quick and efficient as possible? Any tips on making productivity easier?" So that was two emails just about productivity this week. How do we get things done? How do I get my videos done in about a week? How do I get a project from start to finish? I shoot a wedding on the weekend. How do I get that project done in 5 days? Well, I'll tell you. Today's episode is all about workflow, productivity, efficiency. And so that's what we're going to dive into right now. So Thomas didn't specifically ask the question about productivity, but Audrey definitely did. You know, and the first thing I'll say to Audrey out there is that having a kid is hard. It really is. My wife loves it, and I'm getting there. I'm starting to love being a dad. But, you know, as a person who loves to work hard and relax hard, having a kid around makes both of those things feel impossible. You know, kids demand 100% of your attention, almost 100% of your time if they're not sleeping. So You know, the first thing that I had to do and that my wife had to do is realize that we were going to need daycare. We both didn't really want to put our little guy in daycare because, you know, as a parent, you don't want to just, it's hard to explain. Like, I kind of thought when I had my kid, like, oh, I can't wait for daycare to come because, you know, then it takes some pressure off of you. And it definitely does. But, you know, there's some days we walk into the daycare and all the kids are on the floor screaming and crying. And I go and I put my little guy down and he's just sitting there and watching me leave. And like every kid in the daycare is just like screaming their head off. It's like, it's really hard to leave your kid like that. So we had to realize that daycare was going to be something that we had to do. And there's a reason that stay-at-home dads and moms quit their jobs. It's because they have to. You know, taking care of a kid isn't rocket science, but like I said, they demand attention 100% of the time. And my kid barely sleeps during the day, and so when he's awake, he needs attention. And my wife, you know, she's working too. So, yeah, if you got a kid, you just got to bite the bullet and put them in daycare if you really want to get stuff done. So I hate to be the person to say that you can't be a stay-at-home mom and dad and also a wedding videographer, but it's going to be really hard to get those edits done if you're trying to take care of a kid. In regards to my actual workflow, I'm going to give you guys an idea of how I get my work done efficiently. And that starts with the shoot day. And my number one tip is don't overshoot, okay? Get the shots that you know you need and the shots that you want, but try not to overshoot. You know, it's really easy for people to get caught up in thinking that they need to get a shot of every little thing that happens, and that's really not the case. If you're trying to run around and get a shot of, well, here's a good example. Usually, like, once the ceremony ends, the couple signs the marriage license. But usually during that time, I'm packing up equipment. I'm breaking down equipment from inside the church, getting it out to the car, going to the reception spot or whatever. Maybe I got to take a gondola up the mountain, which is oftentimes the case in Vail and these ski towns. So I don't really have time to go shoot the marriage license signing. It's a great example of something that I miss half the time. Sometimes I get it. Sometimes it's convenient and it's like, hey, it's only going to take 2 minutes and we're just doing it right here. And then we'll break down or whatever. But sometimes it's more complicated than that. Sometimes they wander off and I don't know where everybody went to do that. And, you know, it's just one of those things that you just don't necessarily need it, right? Unless your clients told you that it was something that was really important to them. So you won't capture everything, and that's okay. You got to learn to be okay with that. I'd say be intentional about the shots you get. Don't try to be everywhere at all times. You'll just get really sweaty and end up with decent footage because you won't be able to like take time to set up your shots and think through what you want to shoot. You'll just be kind of spraying footage and just getting all sorts of stuff that's maybe it's good, maybe it's not. It probably ends up being like decent, but you know, then you end up with a ton of just okay footage. And the less video you have to comb through and post, the faster you'll get the job done. I tell everybody, my second shooters included, you know, just make sure when you're shooting that you're shooting as close to the finished product as you want, right? So make sure your exposure is good. Make sure everything's in focus. If you want a shot to be stabilized well, make sure you're using the glide cam correctly or the Ronin or the Osmo or whatever it is that you're using to stabilize your footage. Get out there and practice with it on your off days so that when it comes time to, you know, shoot the wedding, like you don't have to do a bunch of post stuff to fix your bad glide cam skills or whatever. You know, and yeah, you just really want to nail everything, and get it as close to perfect as you can on the shoot day. That way you don't have to spend a ton of time in post. So that's my first tip. Shoot day is super important. As far as post-production, I'm going to kind of go through how I do my post-production. And I know that my system is going to be different than a lot of other people's systems out there because, you know, I might be using a different editor. I might be using a different camera. I might be using there's a lot of variables, right? I may not be doing the same kind of video that you're doing. You might be a long form editor. I'm more of a short form editor. So therefore, like, I'm probably going to get my stuff done faster, right? But here's kind of an idea of what I do, and maybe you can take this information and apply it to yourself. So on day one, here's what I do. I convert all my footage to Apple ProRes 422. I don't know if that's the best format to convert my footage to. I shoot on a Canon 5D Mark III. But that's what I do. And it takes about a half day or so. I use a program called MPEG Stream Clip. It's a free program. Just Google it. You'll find it. And I try to do this on Sundays. Usually I shoot a wedding on a Saturday, and Sunday I come home, dump the footage, and then convert it. Usually I only got to check my computer a few times to make sure that it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. But once you get the clips converting, my computer does all the work. So then on Sunday I can, you know, just kind of bounce back and forth and make sure my computer's doing what it's supposed to. But I can mostly hang out with my wife and kid and watch some football and eat some good food, run some errands if we need to. So that's day one. I just transfer the footage. You know, if you haven't backed it up already, make sure you do that. And then I convert it. So that's day one. Day two is ceremony, edit, and export. And on day two, I edit the ceremony in full, and that's it. Once it's done, I export it. So what does that mean? Well, I'm shooting a ceremony from three camera angles. So I'm going to put all those angles together, get them all synced up using a program called Pluralize, brought to you by the folks over at Red Giant Software. You can Google that too. It'll come up real quick. So I sync all my footage and my audio sources. I go through and I cut between the different angles on the first pass. The second pass, I go through and edit all the audio. So I bring up, maybe there's a violinist. Bring up the violinist mic that I had set up. Then I bring that down and bring up the officiant when he starts talking. And then I bring down the officiant and bring up the groom's mic when the bride and groom are doing their vows. And then I bring that down and I bring the officiant's mic back up. And then after he's done with his spiel and they say, oh, you can kiss and everything. And then the violinist starts playing. I bring all that other stuff down and bring up the violinist. And so that's what I do on the second pass. And then on the third pass, I go through and I adjust color. I make sure my cameras match. I don't do a ton of color grading on the ceremony. I just do like adding some saturation back in and adjusting exposure if need be. And sometimes a camera looks a little warmer than another camera. Usually white balance will fix that. But, sometimes it's just the angle, right? And it's just the room. So I try to match those colors up too. And I get all of that done really usually in less than 4 hours. That ceremony is done, exported, and then I immediately upload it to Vimeo. I use Vimeo Pro to host all my videos. So once I have a video done, it gets uploaded automatically. That way, even if all my drives crash for some reason, which would probably never happen, I still have a copy online. So that's day two. It really is super simple. Takes about 4 hours or less. Day three, this is where I organize my footage and export basically what is organized raw footage. I give my clients raw footage, and some people say, oh, why would you do that? Some people do it. It really is kind of whatever you want to do. I do it because I feel like it adds value to the package that I'm offering my clients. And plus, I like to organize the footage anyway, just because I feel like it makes editing the highlight video easier. Just to have it all separated out into like different timelines, like groom prep and bride prep and cocktail hour and toasts and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's all broken up once I organize it. So, you know, as I'm going through my highlight video, it's just so much easier to just click on a timeline and say, oh, here's all my bride prep. Oh, here's all my cocktail hour stuff. Oh, here's all the party dancing. You know what I mean? So that's what I do there. And so on day three, I basically go through all my ProRes footage that's before and after the ceremony, because obviously I've already edited the ceremony. There's no reason to organize the ceremony footage. So I go through all the footage and I put it on separate timelines. And I cut out shaky camera shots, shots of my feet while I'm walking around. Anything that I didn't intentionally record, all that stuff gets shot out or cut out. And I put it all in order chronologically for the most part. You know, sometimes you got some events that are happening kind of simultaneously. But for the most part, I do my best to just put it in a somewhat chronological order for the bride and groom to watch at their leisure. It's just all the decent stuff that I shot on the wedding day. It doesn't have to be the best stuff that I shot, but it, as long as like the shot is good, the exposure is right, and there's nothing too weird about it, it goes on the timelines. And then I combine all those timelines, like I said, into a chronological order, and I export it as a separate video, which I call extras. And just like the ceremony, as soon as that's done, and usually, again, it's really, I did it today for a wedding, and it only took me about 3 hours, and then it's going to take about an hour and a half for it to export. And then I immediately upload it to Vimeo. So yeah, that's what I do on day three. So far we've had 3 4-hour days, right? Where you're only working about 4 hours. And I'm telling you what, there's nothing better than making your friends and family jealous that you only have a 4-hour work day. Although I will say they start to think after a while that maybe you just don't have very much work to do, and maybe that you don't, I definitely have some people that look at me, I think, and think that I need to get a real job. I think they're all waiting for me to still get a real job, quote unquote. But anyway, it's great to just work 4 hours a day. Post day four. Day four, what am I doing on day four? That is the day where I basically lay out the structure of the highlight video. I call this my base highlight video edit. What I do is I pick my music and the sound bites that I'm going to use. So, you know, for me, that's toasts and vows and anything else that I find interesting. And I get it all on the timeline, and I essentially build the foundation of the video. Okay, so when this is done, all I need to do is add B-roll over the top. I've put my music down, I've put my sound bites down where I want them, and now all I have to do is put B-roll over the top. So yeah, awesome. Sometimes I get this done in 4 hours, but more times than not, it takes me maybe 6, maybe 8 if I'm having a hard time finding a song. When it comes to finding a song, guys, really don't spend too much time looking for a song. I used to spend like hours just pouring through music sites trying to find good songs. just don't do it. I mean, if you can't find a good song that fits like the tone of the sound bites or the footage that you have within like an hour or two, just reuse a song that maybe you used last year or something, right? Just pick something and start working on it, because the worst thing you can do is get into like this funk where you're like, oh man, I cannot find the perfect song. What the hell is going on? And then you're just like sitting there for, and all of a sudden a whole day has passed you by just because you don't have a song. So a whole day is what you've wasted. And it's happened to me so many times, and I just had to finally basically just tell myself, hey, if you don't find a song, you're going to reuse that song that you really like from last year. And that's just the way it's going to be. And I don't think most clients are going to notice that you reuse a song unless they've watched all of your videos religiously. I mean, they're just not going to know or remember. And frankly, most of my clients, I don't think would really care. So as long as the video is awesome, I don't think they really care if I reused a song that I used in a different video. So yeah, that was day four. And then day five, I finish the highlight video and export it. I add the B-roll, I color grade the footage, and I export it. And you guessed it, as soon as it's done exporting, I upload to Vimeo and back it up to my hard drives. You know, it just doesn't get much easier than that. In 5 days, you've got a whole project done, at least for me. Again, it depends on what you're offering your clients. If you're offering them a 2-hour film with music and all this, like, yeah, it's going to take you longer. It's not going to take you 2 days probably. Right. But maybe it'll only take you, you know, 10 days, right? Imagine that. Imagine where you get a full project done in 2 weeks. I think it's doable. So you just gotta, and part of this really is just breaking down the workload, right? Because it's easy to look at a project and say, oh man, I got like so much stuff to do. I gotta dump the footage to my drives. I gotta back it up. I gotta convert it. I gotta, then I gotta organize it. Oh man. And then I gotta find music and edit the highlight video. And like, it can be really overwhelming if you don't break it down into little parts. And that's why I just do one thing per day. And it's tempting to really like keep going, you know, like there's some day, like today, I got my organization done on this wedding in 3 hours. And then I was like, oh, well, man, I guess I could start working on the highlight edit, you know, and I can listen to music and I can blah, blah, blah. And it's like, once you start doing that, you kind of start inching yourself back towards getting into an overwhelmed state of mind, right? Where you're like, oh man, I did all this stuff today. And I'm someone who really likes to get stuff done. I don't like to wait. Like, I'm a big believer in the saying, why wait till tomorrow? Why do tomorrow what you can get done today? Or, well, I guess I don't love the saying that much because I barely remember it. But I think you've all heard it. That's my personality. Like, why would I wait to do this tomorrow? I might as well just get it all out of the way today. But I found that pacing myself and really just getting one thing done every day, I feel like I get things done quicker this way. I know it sounds counterintuitive, because why would he get stuff done quicker if he's just doing one thing a day instead of doing two things in a day? But there's something psychological about it. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just crazy or something, but it's just, I get so much more done breaking it down, in the way that I just described. So there you have it. In about 5 days, you can knock out a whole project. I usually, because of my kid and my wife's work schedule and then, you know, housework and, you know, all the things that we have going on in our day-to-day lives, I only usually get to work about 4 hours a day, which, you know, some people would be like, oh, that's awesome. And I agree, it is awesome. But my personality is definitely one of, oh man, I only get 4 hours to work today. Like, I really need 8, you know? But when I keep to this schedule, shit gets done. And like I said before, who doesn't like to work just 4 hours a day? So I hope this has helped you with your workflow ideas. You know, maybe you're in a situation where you're editing these 2 hour long videos, and maybe you don't like doing that. And if you don't like doing it, then you should stop doing it. If you do like doing it, then you should keep doing it. But are there other things that you're doing that maybe you don't need to do, that you could cut from your workflow? You know, something, and I'll give you an example to just jog your minds here. Analyze what you're doing with your time and see if there's anything that you don't really need to do. Ask yourself, do I really need to make these DVDs, right? That's a good question. Man, I can't tell you how freeing it was for me when I got rid of DVD and Blu-ray options for my clients. It was awesome because I used to spend hours, you know, between building the menus, these really cool looking menus, and then, you know, loading up all the discs and putting them in the burner one at a time or two at a time, whatever I was doing. And then, you know, stuffing them in the Blu-ray and DVD sleeves. And then this might blow your minds, but I actually got a shrink wrapper. So I'd get the shrink wrap bags and a bag sealer and a hot air gun. And I used to shrink wrap all my DVDs and Blu-rays in the sleeves when I sent them to the clients. And it looked really good, really incredible. I probably have a picture somewhere of when I used to do that. But it was so time consuming. And then somebody would order like 32 DVDs or something, and I'd send them out. And then they'd write back and be like, we were swearing in this clip of us getting ready. Can you edit that out and then resend us 32 DVDs? Like, just stuff like that. I mean, obviously you could say no, or you could say, I'm going to have to charge you for that or whatever. But like, just getting rid of that whole hard media aspect of my business saved me a ton of time. So I know that no matter what it is that you're offering your clients, you can find a way to like cut things that are unnecessary. I don't even really deliver on USB drives. And I've talked a little bit about this on the website, but hard media is just so old school. There's no reason you can't just deliver everything online. I use Vimeo Pro. People can go to the actual video and all they have to do is click download. That's it. Click download. It's there online. It's there anytime they need it. They can download it to any device. They can watch it anywhere. They can send it to people. They can download the Vimeo app for Roku and Apple TV or whatever it is that they're watching their favorite shows on, and they can pull it up right there on the big TV in the living room too. So yeah, if you know, there's ways to get rid of, you know, all the extra work that we do just because we're perfectionists. I used to be a perfectionist, and I don't know what's happened to me. I guess I just kind of got tired of it. I got tired of really working my ass off and feeling like I wasn't getting paid that much. And some people, you know, have said to me, well, Michael, I'm just charging on a per project basis, so it doesn't really matter how much time it takes me to get this project done. And I'm like, well, it should matter to you, because think about it this way. If I'm spending a week editing a video, right? Here, let's do some math real quick. I'll pull up a calculator. This should be fun. Let's say I shoot a wedding video for $2,500, right? Maybe I charged $3,000, right? And then I spent $500 on a second shooter and
I licensed a song and I paid for gas or something, right? So you got a couple expenses and you're left with $2,500. Now, let's say it takes me 2 weeks, right? So 80 hours of work, about, you know, 2 weeks of 8-hour days to edit and get the whole project done. I've made $31.25 an hour, okay? $31.25. But if it only takes me 40 hours, so 1 week of 8-hour days, to get the same project done, I've made $62.50 an hour. I have doubled my hourly rate, right? So if I can get a wedding done in a week, that means, oh, I could probably take on another wedding, right? So now it's not, oh, I can only do 15 weddings a year. Now it's, oh, I can do maybe 25 weddings a year. Obviously, if we were sticking with that math, we'd say, oh, you can double the amount of weddings that you're doing. I don't know that I would want to double it. 30 weddings, 30 weddings is really my cutoff for me personally. I probably do 30 weddings, including the second shooting gigs that I do. I think I second shot two or three times this year, and I think I had 28 weddings. I wouldn't want to really necessarily get up too far over 30. And Thomas here in that email that he sent said he does 60. So if he's doing, Thomas, if you're doing 60 weddings by yourself, and you're having a hard time getting those edited, I would say either raise your prices, really think about really tacking on like a good $500, $1,000, $1,500. I'm not sure what you're charging, but I would definitely tack on a good chunk of change to your price sheet for this next year. I would do that immediately. You should really think about, and this kind of depends on your business model, and I'm kind of talking out of my ass because I don't really know what Thomas's business model is. I don't know if he has employees. I don't know the situation, but I'd say for one person to do 60 weddings a year, unless you really love it and like you're not happy at all when you're watching Netflix or, spending time with the family. Maybe you're a single dude, Thomas. It looks like you like fish. Looks like you like maybe some diving and some other things besides wedding videography. I would raise my prices and I would try to get down to 30 weddings a year max for one person. I just think, based on my experience, it just feels like too much if you go beyond that. If you have employees that are going out and shooting weddings for you, that's a whole nother thing. I got an assistant who I've sent out on a couple weddings for days that I was already booked. I've probably done more than 30 weddings this year, but it wasn't me personally doing them. So I would really try to get that number down. Otherwise, you are going to go crazy unless you have an even better system and workflow than what I have, which is definitely possible. But unless that's happening, sounds like you'll probably be stressed out. And Audrey, she's saying she's doing 4 weddings a month in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I have to imagine there's a bit of a wedding season up there in Pennsylvania. Got to imagine, just because I know it snows and stuff in the Northeast. So, if you're doing 4 a month, I think that's a good number, but only as long as there's a season. If you're really doing 4 a month, 12 months out of the year, it's probably too many. Because you'll be working full time at that point, and that puts you at about 48 weddings a year. So you're not doing too much better than Thomas in terms of getting stuff done. So, And if
if you find that there's a huge demand and you don't want to say no to people, I know as well as anyone that it's hard to turn down weddings, but consider raising your prices. You'll get fewer inquiries, which I know sounds terrible to a lot of people. But those inquiries that you do get will hopefully be people that can afford to pay your new price. So yeah, every year I raise my prices and every year I get like a few less inquiries. But the inquiries and the weddings that I do get and that I do book, they are more expensive. So it makes up for the fact that I'm not shooting as many weddings. And usually I end up making more money. Now, if you get to a point where you're just charging too much, that's a problem. So I suggest raising your prices incrementally. I know people that are like, oh, just double your prices. And I don't know that, unless you're only charging $1,000 for a wedding, I don't know that doubling your prices is necessarily a good strategy, but I don't think there's any, you really can't go wrong by incrementally raising your prices, $250, $500, $750, something like that. You know, just kind of raise those prices and see what happens. Give it a few months. Don't raise your prices and then after a week or 3 weeks be like, oh, nobody's inquired. I must have pushed my prices too high. If you only raised your prices by $250, don't worry. You're not going to lose all of your potential clients. So hang in there, give it a little bit of time. But yeah, you know, I think people that struggle with, and just to sum up today's show, I'm starting to ramble a little bit, but we'll wrap it up here. But just to sum up today's show, I think people that struggle with getting things done, usually they're just trying to do too much, whether that's they're trying to offer their clients too much. Maybe you're still making Blu-rays. Maybe you're the guy that's still got the Roxio toast going. It might be time to give that up. Or maybe you're just taking on too many weddings. Maybe you're not giving yourself enough time to go deep sea diving, right? Out at the reef. Although I don't think that's deep sea. I think if you're near a coral reef, maybe you can deep sea dive near a coral reef. We'll have to have Thomas on to give us the lowdown about deep sea diving and such. But maybe you're doing too many weddings. So, you know, just kind of take a step back and think, what can I do to get things done a little bit quicker? And if that's instituting my workflow, then awesome. Let me know if you try my workflow out and you like it, shoot me an email. Let me know that it's working. If you try it out and you're like, oh, this is the worst thing ever, shoot me an email. Let me know what's not working. Michael@weddingvideographyschool.com. That's MICHAEL at weddingvideographyschool.com. Thanks, guys. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. We will be back very soon with another episode. And until then, be safe and shoot well.